Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour. Here we've got Jonna Spilbor, we have Carol Pesci, we have myself, and I'm Frankenberry, by the way, in case you didn't know who myself was. And Jonna today is AKA Buns of Steel. And I don't know what that's in reference to, but I'm sure Jonna will enlighten us as to her Buns of Steel.
Did you get your butt electrocuted like you did your stomach?
So you're kind of on the right path. I did not get my buns electrocuted, but I am going to get my buns electrocuted. Why am I going to get my buns electrocuted?
Because you're an idiot, but no, keep going.
I am
brilliant lawyer by day.
That's right.
Electric buns by night. No, I am going to do it, you guys, because this is probably the first time in a long time or really ever where I have done something, you know, weird like this. Like, you know, I've been doing the electrocuting my ab muscles.
Yeah.
And this ish worked. I am not kidding. I have abs of steel as I sit here. I did six sessions of this. So that's the equivalent of 60,000 sit-ups. And I swear to God, I would go in a bikini. I would put a bikini on and march myself into court right now. Like, hey,
that's my line.
I've turned into you.
Yeah,
oh right. My God.
And then you look at the entire courtroom, ask anybody if they have a quarter and if they want to bounce it off.
That's right.
Well, that's cool that at least that you being electrocuted and being like bounced off the table. Has paid off.
No, it's totally paid off. You know, I probably liquefied all my major organs and shortened my lifespan by 40 years, but.
Hey, but you look great.
I look great. So,
wow.
That inspired my moniker today, Buns of Steel, because that is next. And therein lies all the good news. Now I have to talk to you about something.
Here she is, Frankenberry, working her way around the menu.
Yep,
like we talked about last time.
I know.
Yeah. Now, I'm very upset because, and I just need your opinions. I'll tell you exactly what happened. I'm very upset because also for the first time in my life, somebody called me a Karen. Yes.
No.
Yes.
What did you do, Spilly? What did you do?
Now, I really don't think I was being a Karen because I really don't think I was, but here's what happened. Now, okay, granted, I have not been in the best of moods on account of
you've been electrocuted.
Well, no, that's put me in a great mood.
Oh,
because
okay.
My like right before Labor Day weekend, the HVAC, namely the AC in part of my house, the new part of my house, the renovated part of my house, crapped out.
Uh-oh.
And as you know, we're coming off a very hot summer. So the part that crapped out is the bedroom, the closets, the loft, and the bathroom, like where my major life is, you know. So it's still, as I sit here today, it is still crapped out. And I feel like I've been living in the back of a taxi cab. You know, when you're in a taxi cab and the taxi driver has his front windows open to like dispel the smell of his burrito, but he blasts the AC in the back to make up for it. And you can't see out the windows because it's all fogged up. That's
and the
my
seats.
Life.
Ugh.
Yeah. So my life has been, I've been like in a, like a terrarium. I've been living in a terrarium in my house because of the difference in temperatures from the broken AC section of the house to the overcompensating section of the house, which is downstairs. So,
and the most important question I have of all
is,
and what impact is this having on your hair?
I know my hair
right?
has been curlier than it's ever been in my entire life. And I have not been happy about it. So my mood has been affected. Okay. With that said, I'm trying to keep it together. You know, I try not to bite people's heads off or anything like that, even when my hair is frizzed out. So during this period, one night I was laying in bed hot because I have no AC. And so I have the windows open so I can breathe. And at about 3 o'clock in the morning, a dog next door starts to bark. Now, you guys,
what's a dog doing out at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Well, that's what I said. I mean, you guys know I'm a dog lover. I don't mind barking dogs, but I don't usually hear dogs barking at 3 o'clock in the morning in my neighborhood. So I laid there and I'm like, all right, well, maybe the dog sees a raccoon or the dog sees an animal and the dog's going to stop barking. Well, 10 minutes goes by.
No.
20 minutes goes by. Now I'm laying in bed, hot, curly haired, 3:30 in the morning, windows wide open, dogs
pissed
going
off.
Up. And well, I didn't get to pissed off yet. I went I wonder what that is, to very concerned, because my mind started saying, okay, this dog is trying to alert me that Timmy fell down the well. Like there's somebody passed out in the front yard and this dog needs somebody to know about it. Or there's somebody passed out inside the house and this dog needs somebody to know about it. Or maybe the dog had gotten locked out earlier in the day, like he ran away and then he came back and now he wants in the house. Like all these scenarios are going through my head because the dog was incessantly barking. And I said to my dog, if a dog is incessantly barking inside a person's house, loud enough to wake the neighbor, i.e. me, then why wouldn't the occupants of said house wake up and comfort the dog and stop?
Right.
The dog?
The dog's upset. Like, first and foremost, the dog is upset.
Right. The dog had to be upset, had to be suffering some sort of anxiety for whatever reason. So now since I have my windows open, I get up and I'm trying to like look and I'm trying to hear where exactly this dog is coming from, because I can't tell if the dog is outside or, you know, sometimes your dog can bark from inside. And if you have your windows open, it'll sound like he's outside. Mm-hmm. So I try to investigate. I had to turn off the million fans they had running to compensate for the no AC. And I've got my ear to the screen and I'm listening and I can't quite tell if the dog is inside or outside. Well, now, fast forward, about an hour goes by and the dog did not stop. And then on top of the dog not stopping after a full hour, and I'm not exaggerating because you know I don't do that.
No, you don't. No, ever.
At about the 1 hour mark, another dog joined in.
There
are two dogs. So now it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Two dogs are barking. And I have convinced myself that there has been a murder inside the house. I've convinced myself, you guys, I was so sure that somebody was dead. And I said to myself, if I don't do something, I will never forgive myself. And that's how I worked up I got. So what did I do?
You knocked on their door.
I called the police. Now, here's how the conversation went, you guys. Now, you know damn well that probably whoever answered the phone might know me, right? Maybe we've
got a good chance. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. How would police possibly know a lawyer?
So I don't call 911. I'm in the town of Poughkeepsie. So I call the town of Poughkeepsie and I start the conversation with, we have a situation. I don't think it's an emergency, but here's what you need to know. And I go on to explain dog barking. It's been an hour. Now another dog. I know something's got to be wrong. This hasn't happened before. I saw people in the house earlier in the day doing yoga. So somebody's home. So the dispatch was very nice. I'm going to send somebody right over. Okay. No sooner do I hang up the phone. The dog barked during the whole conversation. So I hope that the dispatch heard the dog. No sooner do I hang up the phone, dead silence.
Oh,
dead
no.
Silence.
Of course.
Okay. So now I'm like, now I feel like an a-hole. I just called the police thinking my neighbors are dead. The dogs are barking. The dogs stop barking. They're going to send a cop car over. And I'm like, I got to shut all my lights. I got to shut my TV. I got to pretend I'm asleep because I.
Yes, you do.
And that's what I did. So I run around, I shut all the lights, I shut the TV. I'm like, I can't be known that I'm still awake. I don't want the cop knocking on my door so I can explain my thought process. So I don't know whether the cops came or didn't come, but this gets a little bit worse. So now the next morning, my much younger boyfriend was staying with me that weekend, and I explained what happened because he slept through it. Why did he sleep through it? Because he was sleeping downstairs where there was air conditioning. I was sleeping upstairs where there was none. So he missed it. And when I explained what happened, he said, "Wow, way to go, Karen." Way to go, Karen. So now I have to defend myself. I'm like, the whole thing, just what I told you, murder, somebody's dead, dog, I don't know. And he's like, "No, still Karen." So about a week has gone by. I've tried to let it go. I've tried to convince myself I'm not a Karen, when just the other morning, not at an unreasonable time, a normal time, like 7, I hear what I believe to be the same dog barking, because I listened to it for an hour. Now I know the dogs bark, and wouldn't you know it, didn't sound like it was coming from the neighbor's house who I called the police on.
Oh no.
It sounded like it was coming from a different neighbor's house, not the neighbor to the side, but the neighbor to the front. So now I'm sitting there trying to dry my humidified hair, still with no AC, reeling from the fact that I may have been a Karen. And now it turns out that I could have called the police at 4 o'clock in the morning on the wrong house.
And that there's a decent chance that the police knocked on their door. Yeah. Or pulled up and listened. Maybe they didn't hear anything and left. But we're going to go with that one.
All right, let's go with that one. And how often do you think the town of Poughkeepsie police are replaying the recording of my 4 a.m. phone call from that night? Like, just for fun, like, yeah, the right lawyer's right here. Listen to that.
the right lawyer's right here.
Rewind.
Oh, my God. Yep, here she is right here. Oh, man.
Here is my question. And you please be honest with me. Actually, don't. I need you to. You know what I need you to say. Was that a Karen move? Yes or no?
Oh, man, it's a little gray, honestly, because...
Let me explain.
So that kind of thing would make me angry and crazy. I covet my sleep. Mm-hmm. And if someone's dog is barking for that long, that's mean to the dog to not address it. Mm-hmm. It's rude to anybody in earshot. And so that would make me angry. So I would want to do something. So your anger, justified. Would I pick up the phone and call the police? I don't know. But I don't actually, now as I'm talking my way through this, I don't think this qualifies as a Karen, because I don't think your primary motivation was these people are jerks, I'm calling the police on them. I think you genuinely worked yourself up into the fear that something was wrong.
Exactly.
And yeah, and to me, that gives you an out for being a Karen.
Thank you. I did not call the police to shut up a dog. I called the police to investigate a murder. Go ahead.
I'm not saying a word, man. I'm kind of with Carol. So, really, we all know what Karen moments generally qualify as, and this doesn't really fit in that particular boat. You know what I'm saying? Most Karen moments do not come from just a neighbor's barking dog. They come from other things. No, I think just like Carol said, you worked yourself up into a frenzy. You convinced yourself there were dead bodies laying all over lawns, down by the river, and the police needed to investigate. That's all. It just means that you're a little nutty.
I should have lied about my name. Like, if I had lied about my name.
But they have caller ID, and they got to take your name. If you call the police, you know this. If you call the police and make any kind of report, the first things they're asking you is who you are. Right. And what your contact information is.
And next time I'm going to say I'm Curly Pesky. I'm housekeeping for my good friend. And I'm such a jerk, though, because earlier in the day. So part of what went into this equation is that my neighbors frequently, I don't know them very well. They frequently rent their house out as an Airbnb. So every weekend I have a different set of neighbors. So I don't know if there was a lot of people in the house, a few people in the house, if this was a visitor's dog or the neighbors do have.
Oh, right. Okay.
But earlier in the day, whoever was renting this house, oh my God, they must not have been from around here, because after they completed their yard yoga, which they were doing during the middle of the day, they went for a little dip in the Hudson River like it was a spa. And you guys know that really the Hudson River around here is not convenient for or conducive for swimming.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's okay for swimming if you want to come out of the water with a third arm or an extra eyeball.
Right, or a dead fish.
Yeah.
You know, it's not exactly the clean. Now, it's pretty, don't get me wrong, and there's a lot of water things that go on there, but swimming is not what it's really ideal for. And do you think I went over there and said, hey, you kids, get out of the river, like you're going to hurt yourself? No, I was just like, oh,
look at those dummies.
Yeah, glad I'm not them. And then this happened. You know, if I were really concerned about my fellow human beings, I would have fished them out of the water and, you know, taken them to the nearest clinic. But I didn't.
Exactly. Have I told you about the Hudson River leeches? Get out of the water.
I know. Oh, God.
So, well, maybe that dog was barking because they never did come back out of the water.
Oh, boo boom, boo doom. Yeah, maybe not. I think they did, but that was something. And interestingly, that has not happened since. And I know this because I am frequently awake at 3 o'clock in the morning anyway. And also, as mentioned, my AC is still not working. There's that.
Do either of you, like, I think I can pretty well define a Karen moment or not, but do either of you know where that expression even came from? Because I don't.
Huh. It had to be maybe a person who did it was actually named Karen, you know, like George and Newman.
Yeah.
Karen. Like
the very first one who unnecessarily called the cops on somebody in the middle of a public park. Her name just happened to be named Karen, and it stuck for everybody else. Certainly possible. Or it's just a generic name that seems to fit.
Well, but then why isn't it like Anne or Mary?
Couldn't tell.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. That was cool.
You know what? We're going to Google this.
I'm already on it.
Oh, good. Good. We're going to Google the origin of Karen.
Perceived as entitled or demanding beyond the scope of what is normal.
Oh, man.
Oh, hang on.
Now what?
No, I'm just trying to find out what like it's saying what it means, but not really what. Like, I got to do more research. Yeah, I got to do more research.
Because what we need is like a Wikipedia page with a picture of the first Karen, you know, like named after Karen Ellingsworth, who, I don't know, called the police on her neighbor's dog in 1775. I don't know.
Yeah, not sure.
Gotta be there, though. So anyway, I mean, I've been called a lot of things in my day. Karen has not been one of them. And I think I hate that the most.
Of all the things.
Not to change the subject, but you guys know oftentimes we do this show. I'm watching this television show called Paws TV. It's all about animals. And I'm really, really tempted to maybe invest in some goats. What do you think?
I think it'd be great. Didn't you want to have to pay somebody to mow your lawn?
I know. Do they stay out all winter? Like, how do you, when people have goats, do you let them in or what do you do?
I don't know.
I couldn't tell you.
They like to climb on things, though, so keep your cars inside.
Oh, yeah. Those little
even bugs. Your beater BMW.
Stop that.
All right. Come on. Let's get back to the program.
Yeah. I'm going to change my license plate from Lady Law to Karen.
Weren't goats involved in those secret CIA mind-reading experiments back from the Cold War?
Are we back on air again?
Do you see what he just tried to do? Wait.
Yes! That's why I'm asking.
Of course we're back in there. We're still recording.
All right. So just so that everybody's clear on this, we've been doing this show for about 100 years.
Correct.
And every time we do a show, Carol is the one who comes up with a cheesy segu, which is really a segue, a cheesy segu as we get ready to head into segment two where we interview a guest. in the 100 years we've been doing the show, Frankenberry has never, not once, not a single time, tried to attempt the
Chinsugu. You are wrong.
Once before.
You are wrong. It was just
I'm not wrong.
Just a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact, or just a couple of months ago, I actually had one, and you guys were celebrating the fact that it was my first and only one ever.
I remember. I don't remember what it was, but I do remember.
So anyway, we'll take number two then. Is that okay, Shauna?
Number two.
Oh, my God.
God, how quickly we just
and when you say we, you mean you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't recall Carol and I getting all juvenile all of a sudden.
You are fully responsible for this one, Spillmore. Oh man, you took it there in a classic quick twist. Okay. Oh, right. God, we gotta stop right now.
Yeah, we're gonna stop, but not for long.
But
when we come back from the break, this is, and I'm telling you guys, and Carol and I, without talking to each other, we both use the same word to describe the book our next guest is going to talk to us about. So we're going to have on the line with us Dr. David Lieberman. Now, he's an author, a renowned psychotherapist, and an author of 11 books. His most recent one that we're going to be discussing today is called Mind Reader: The New Science of Deciphering What People Really Think, What They Really Want, and Who They Really Are. And Carol and I both described this book as fascinating because it really, really is. So when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking to renowned psychotherapist and author, Dr. David Lieberman.
All right, that's what we've got, and that's what's on the way. So please stick around. You've got Jonas Spillboard, Carol Pesci. This is Happy Hour, and we will be right back.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spillboard and Carol Pesci and myself. And segment number two, of course, is where we always get to our guest. And we have a special guest today. And Doc, what is it that I'm thinking?
Do you really want me to say?
No, I don't, because this is family-friendly radio.
Yes.
Ask the question you don't want the answer to.
That's the number one rule of being an attorney. Is that not correct?
That is absolutely true. And speaking of being an attorney, this book, I'm finding this book fascinating for a number of reasons, not the least of which is because I am one. But before we get to that and all of our questions about the book, we have on the line with us Dr. David Lieberman. He is a renowned psychotherapist and the author of not one, not two, but 11 books, including New York Times bestsellers Get Anyone to Do Anything and Never Be Lied to Again. He has trained personnel in the U.S. military, the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA, and has instructional video. Hang on. Pause, Frankenberry. And his instructional video is mandatory for psychological operations graduates. He teaches government negotiations, mental health professionals. Frankenberry, pause one more time.
What are you doing?
I know. I'm sorry. You know what it is? My glasses are fogged up because my house is one big taxi cab.
Well, you know what it is. Hey, look, you might have buns of steel, girlfriend, but you ain't got a brain of steel today. What's going on?
Oh my God. Oh, our boys are professionals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, right. You guys.
All right.
Now I can't stop laughing.
Be quiet. Okay.
This sounds like my Thanksgiving Day table, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You're not too far off.
And this is all staying in, by the way, Spillboard. I'm just letting you know. I'm not editing this crap out.
Oh, yes, Frankenberry. Yes. Okay, go.
Oh, man. Okay. He teaches government negotiations, mental health. All right. You're going to take that out.
It's amazing you guys don't do this live.
We used to. And we've been doing this for 11 years. This is hysterical. I think she's afraid that she's like revealing something about herself to you. And it's like, oh, but Clint, I don't know. No, maybe it's me. Yeah, maybe I'm projecting. All right. right, I'm gonna mute myself.
He teaches government negotiators, mental health professionals, and Fortune 100 executives, and has appeared as a guest on more than 300 television and radio programs, including the Today Show, NPR, the Howard Stern Show, and The View. And you know, you've really reached the pinnacle of your career when you appear on Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol. Dr. Lieberman, welcome to the show.
Thank you, ladies. Happy to be here.
And thank you for your patience.
Yeah, I know.
All good. I mean, it is Happy Hour, so you guys are fulfilling that mandate.
That was our goal. I think we've lost her audio, which is just, I can't believe this. That was our goal from the beginning with this show. Honestly, we wanted to deliver good content to people that help them live better, understand themselves better, just anything. But we wanted to do it in a fun, casual style. And that,
I think that's usually beautiful. There's so much heavy and so much hate. So it's nice that you infuse some joy into the airwaves.
Yeah, that's one thing we are all good at with this show in particular. There's genuine love and trust amongst us, so we can laugh at ourselves and we can laugh at each other and not worry about it.
Very nice. Very nice.
Well, Doc, I've never done this in the 100 years that we've been on the air, but I'm going to call you out for that statement. Why am I going to call you out? Because I am 2/3 of the way through this book, and I now know that your word choice in saying that we have infused some levity into a chaotic world was your very, very kind way of saying that we are immature. That we are immature and borderline unprofessional, but you're going to go with the flow. I got you right here. All right.
All right. Checkmate.
But I understand. So let's just to give the title of the book one more time. The book, your newest book, is entitled Mind Reader: The New Science of Deciphering What People Really Think, What They Really Want, and Who They Really Are. Now, that's big. Those are all big concepts that could be useful in a number of different settings. So before we dive in, tell us why you wrote this book.
Right. So if you think about it, human nature hasn't changed in however many thousands of years, but communication has changed dramatically. You've got Twitter now with, 280 characters, whatever they're up to. And then the advent of COVID gave us mass communication, oftentimes taking place over Zoom. So the ability to be able to read people, even relying on body language, whatever signs and signals are useful, and many of them are just not as effective as we suspect that they are. But even using the ones that are, a lot of them are just rendered inert. So, it was time for some more sophisticated ways of being able to read people. And as you may know, I developed a lot of the original body language signs going back about 20, 25 years in my original books. And this is the first time that we've really updated the technology when it comes to law enforcement, comes to interview and interrogation. And as you mentioned, the applications are near endless in terms of, wanting to know. We've all been there, whether it's a first date or whether it's dealing with your kids or spouse or a coworker, whether somebody is really being honest with us, if they're interested, if they're hiding something, and being able to glean that is just undeniably valuable.
And don't you think, I think it's undeniably valuable, and especially in a law enforcement application, but this book goes beyond that. In everyday life, I think these techniques can be really useful. And tell me if I'm being too cynical, but I feel as though as a society, we have become increasingly more deceptive. I mean, I want to be wrong, but I don't know if it's because everybody does everything online and it's easier until this book to hide your true motivation.
Right.
You really mean, or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I think that's a very sad but true characterization of the way things are today. And the reason is because, I think there is certainly a decay in people's emotional and mental health. And when we become less healthy, it's going to leak out in a myriad of ways. And one of them is going to be dishonesty, where we're going to lie to maybe manipulate or to injure or to protect protect our fragile ego. There are a number of reasons now that it becomes more pronounced in terms of, you know, that with the decay of people's own mental health. So the ability to be able to protect ourselves from unscrupulous people. And again, it's not just for those, you know, interrogations and negotiations or the serious situations, but in everyday life, you know, if your waiter's bringing you by, you know, regular coffee and you ask for decaf and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, maybe you want a technique to find out if you're going to be up till 4 a.m, you know?
And Dr. Lieberman, this is Carol, excuse me, John. I just want to say, yes, we both said fascinating. And you caused an issue for me this morning because I downloaded your book on sample on Kindle because I like to do some background. I'm like, that's not enough. I need to buy this. So I downloaded the full book on Kindle and then couldn't stop reading until the interview. So anything else I had planned on getting done didn't get done. And that's okay. It's fascinating and it's brilliant. But what I also want to say is I think that this book is, at least for me personally, equally as valuable to understand ourselves.
I so appreciate you said that. And that is the aspect I'm most proud of, is because, yeah, it's almost like a self-help book in disguise, because as you understand human nature, certainly you can read other people, but it gives you the opportunity for such introspection in the way we talk to ourselves, the way we think, the way we communicate to others.
Yes.
It can reveal us just that subconscious level that brings us to a new level of awareness of ourselves.
100%.
Which is also, I enjoy that aspect of it too, because I will say this, you know, there are a lot of concepts that you thoroughly describe and they're all relatable. But the one that is very relatable to me is when you were describing, and it is in the section where you start to talk about mental health and you describe what can cause people to be and how they act if they're being emotionally stingy. And I made a mental note because I love that phrase, emotionally stingy, because I find myself being that. And I didn't have a way to describe it, but now I do. But it makes sense. Like what your moods can affect your behavior, obviously. And
sure,
you know, I find that another fascinating aspect of the concepts in the book.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is that, you know, being able to read somebody, whether they're being honest or not, or they're interested or not, but is one thing. But gauging their emotional health, I mean, imagine the ability to be able to have a 5-minute conversation with somebody and know whether or not this is someone that you want to keep at arm's length, you know, let alone, you know, allow them to be your nanny or your cook or an employee or whatever. And so emotional stingy, I think I'm speaking about empathy. And, you know, there are times when we all become a little bit absorbed in our own pain and we're unable to focus on the pain of others. But those who are literally absorbed in their own pain, it's like having a permanent toothache. They just can't focus on other people. And that's one of the hallmarks of emotional health, being able to get out of your own stuff and see through the lens of somebody else and to feel their pain, to share their pain. And while we're absorbed in our own, that just simply becomes impossible.
And this is yet another benefit for people reading your book, is to perhaps be less likely to jump to judgment. Well, you're a jerk or you're an a-hole, to become a little bit more curious, to recognize what you're seeing on the outside could be reflecting something deeper on the inside. And does this person need compassion from you rather than anger and judgment?
That's a beautiful point. And yes, certainly sometimes the people who make it toughest to love are the ones who need it the most.
Yep.
And when we see that gruff exterior, it is oftentimes protecting a very insecure, sensitive interior.
You must have a field day watching politicians.
Yes, even with the sound off.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's something I encourage you to do. If you know, if you want to learn better how to read people, just turn off the sound and you'll see, oh, I think they're saying this. And then when you turn the sound back on, you see what the point was. They oftentimes is so incongruent and just doesn't match up. But politicians, celebrities, everyday life really provides a field day. And, you know, it's one of those things where once you know what to pay attention to, it just becomes like that sixth sense and you don't have to look for it. You can just, you know, walk around with that extra degree of security and comfort and know what people are thinking and feeling when they may not be so honest with you.
And you know, it's funny you said, I'm sorry, Jonna, go ahead.
That's so important. Like I always come back to myself, like in my business, for example, where I have to talk to a variety of people in a variety of painful situations, right? They've been arrested, they're getting divorced, they've been hurt. Reading what I often find there's a difference what they say and what they truly are feeling. And then I can recognize that, but then I don't know what to do next.
Ah, very good. Very good. So you're saying is they're not being honest with themselves. They're not being honest with you.
Probably both, right, Jonna?
Both.
Right. Yeah, so if they're not being honest with themselves, it's very good. So one of the things you want to make sure you do, whether it's a therapeutic setting or in counseling, and certainly in law, is, as you well know, establishing rapport is the key to that emotional bridge and being able to help them to be more honest and connect with you. Because if they don't like, trust, and respect you, you're not going to have a connection. They're not going to be honest with you, with themselves, let alone with you. So certainly creating that sort of safe space where they know that they can express themselves and be vulnerable without being judged, without being condemned, that will allow for them to sort of open that subconscious floodgates and to be more honest with you. But if you feel that they mean one thing or they're thinking one thing, but they themselves don't recognize it, then just simply float it, sort of a trial balloon, and say, I'm not wondering if, rather than certainly not accuse them, say, I'm not wondering if it's possible. And then you see their resistance level. If they become very resistant, it'll be obvious in their defense mechanisms, or they may sort of attach themselves to it. But simply by floating it as your observation, rather than something that they're not being honest with themselves about, I think you're going to find a little bit more leeway.
And something I found reading your book so far as well is some of the very specific examples that you help us understand. It's like, wow, yes, I can understand that. I can see that. I can remember an interaction with someone where, yeah, I get that. And I also have this sense that there's times we're intuitively reading these things. And now you kind of put a structure and name to it. Like,
Yeah. And that's just it. Sometimes you have that sixth sense, your gut is telling you something, but you think either they're going to think I'm crazy or it's embarrassing or I'm just be paranoid. And when you're able to quantify it, crystallize it and say, oh, I am thinking this because of XYZ and put actual something, you know, concrete to it, it alleviates that confusion and makes you feel more confident because you know what you are thinking about this person is in fact accurate and not simply just your own paranoia or whatever.
Doctor, along those lines, so is it ever effective? So let's say, for example, when previously you said, you know, look, you can make people feel more comfortable and don't be judgy and get them to open up so they'll build a rapport with you or you with them, et cetera, by, you know, kind of playing with the words that you use if you're going to call somebody out.
Sure.
But is it ever beneficial? And like, for example, one time, I'll say one time, but it's happened more than once. I was having a conversation with a person and I was 100% convinced that the person was lying, right? And so instead of beating around the bush, which I often do when I'm trying not to be judgy, I just said, look, I know you're lying. Like the gig is up. I know you're lying. Here's why I know you're lying. And then the response that I got, I believe to be the truth. Do you often get the truth if you do call somebody out in a circumstance like that? Or did I just get another lie and thought it was the truth?
Right. So I prefer not to call somebody out for a number of reasons. Number one is I could be wrong. I mean, I get it wrong. And one of the reasons why the book has gotten so much attention is because it doesn't rely on just one or two markers. You know, if you've got 7, 8, 9 within a single, you know, conversation to be able to draw from. But even then, and you feel conclusively that they're lying, you're not going to be able to get more information from them as soon as they know that you're onto them. So generally, I prefer to sort of keep that to myself and gather the facts, gather more information. Again, there's a chance I could be wrong. But also, I know that if they think they've sold me, they're going to be much less guarded. As soon as I call them out on it, it's a different conversation.
Do you think then, like, is there a cure for gaslighting? You know, because a lot of gaslighters will do that. They adopt a lie so much that they believe it's the truth. And in order to not be gaslighted, you got to be able to recognize that, no?
No doubt. And that's actually a very sharp points. And usually with gaslighting is there's a degree of awareness. Otherwise, the person would, you could say that there's some element of psychosis, meaning that they're substituting their own reality for a real one. And the truth is they're trying to convince you of an alternate reality. So generally, again, with gaslighting, you know, the person doing it knows what they're doing. If they don't, it's a whole different ball of wax, as they say, and you're going to want a different approach. But, you know, a gaslighter, you know, you call that person out on it, they're like picking up a tomato seed. You'll get nowhere. You have to be much sharper. And I rarely will let anyone know that I'm aware of what it is that they're doing when I have an opportunity to gather so much more information without their awareness.
That's also genius. That's a game changer.
Yep.
I like it. Yeah. It's like just pulling the information out. Because knowledge is power. I like that.
Right.
Dr. Lieberman, have you ever thought, I'm becoming aware right now of how valuable this would be for anybody, really, in any aspect of their lives where they're interacting with other people as a parent. So valuable.
Yeah.
I would, if I had children, I would want my teenagers reading this book. Have you ever thought about putting one out specifically for young people, or do you just encourage people to buy this book no matter their priceless?
I so appreciate that, and I have my older kids reading it for sure. But, you know, it's funny, my younger kids always ask why I don't put out children's books just in general. They go, because it's so many fewer words. You just make some pictures, Daddy. Why don't you just put out a kid's book? You spend 5 years writing this book, you can do a kid's book in like 10 minutes. But, you know, I hear the point. And yeah, I do think there's some applications. You know, the language is not, you know, hopefully not too tricky. And it's written, obviously, if you know, for the everyday person. So I think, you know, teenagers today are pretty savvy. So the ones that I know have read it seem to have gotten the gist of it. But I do hear, certainly for younger kids, revising it to make it more digestible for them so that they're more aware of their surroundings and the people that they talk to. And so when they get that gut feeling that something is just not right, you know, they're able to know and with confidence
that
they can act on it without feeling like, oh, I don't want to hurt their feelings or embarrass them, or I'm just being silly.
Oh, right. That would be amazing for teenagers to understand that. And equally, I mean, and maybe this is in the future, but when you are a parent and you're trying to deal with your teenagers, like, for example, I have somebody in my world who has a teenage daughter who's really, really, really acting up.
Yeah.
And this parent was talking to me about an event that her kid did. And I looked and I said, well, she's obviously lying to you. And I pointed out X, Y, Z. And the parent looked at me like I had three heads and then went, oh my God, I totally did not see that.
Yeah.
I'm like, how can you not see that? So it helped her. I mean, well, which it was a family member, so I could be kind of that bold. But
sure,
a lot of parents are blind, maybe intentionally, maybe not, to their kids when they're growing up and they get to this age. It's great for them to hone these skills to help the children.
Yeah, I agree. And also one of the most gratifying feedback categories I get is when parents tell me that they, you know, learn that their kid, unfortunately, that, you know, we're experimenting with different drugs or alcohol, or different, you know, levels of inappropriate behavior, depending on the age, just from, you know, reading a two chapters. And, you know, what it does is, first off, the parent is armed with the information, and now they can have a meaningful conversation, or at least know where their child is holding, rather than just be left in the dark.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I love about this book. There is a lot to digest in it, but it applies to almost every area of life, whether you're meeting somebody new, whether you're raising your kids, whether you're doing business with strangers. There is something in here that will benefit every single person with eyeballs who reads this book.
And or ears.
Or ears. And there's so much in here, but it is digestible. So you really manage to, which is not easy because a lot of these concepts are, you know.
I appreciate that, but I'm not going to take full credit here. My editor at Rodale and just the publishing house in general of Penguin Random House has been extraordinary in really helping to craft this book into the product that it is. So they really get the lion's share of the credit.
Yeah, and make no mistake, my suggestion about writing one specific for teens, this is completely understandable for someone at that age. I just like my marketing brain.
Yes, I appreciate it. I'll make sure to send you your nickel.
So, Dr. Lieberman, I know we have to wrap up here in a couple minutes, but can I just ask you, so when you're not busy writing bestsellers and consulting with the FBI and the CIA, like what... are you coaching? Are you speaking? Can people connect with you one-on-one? Like what's a day in the life?
Right. So certainly I'm on social media, Instagram and LinkedIn. They're welcome to connect. It'd be nice to say hello. We've got the website, which it'd be good if I knew what it was called. I think it's drdavidlieberman.com. And yeah, people are welcome to reach out, whether it's consulting, corporations or organizations, profit, nonprofit. We try to get to as many people as we can.
Yeah, you're just a wealth of information. And again, we're wrapping up here with Dr. David Lieberman, PhD. His latest book is Mind Reader, The New Science of Deciphering What People Really Think, What They Really Want, and Who They Really Are. And I guarantee you, everybody within earshot, when you read this book, you're going to have a whole new appreciation and understanding of what makes people tick, even when they don't want you to know how they're ticking. So, Dr. Lieberman, really appreciate you joining us today on Happy Hour. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. All the best of luck to all of you. Thank you.
All right, Doc. Well, thank you very much again. And we will be back here with more from Happy Hour. Segment number 3 is on the way, so please stick around. We will return.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here one more time this morning with Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
Well, Dr. Lieberman certainly was very cool.
Fascinating.
It really is fascinating stuff, and there's a lot to digest. Like, we couldn't possibly get to it in one small interview, but I really encourage people to pick up this book. It will help you. I don't care whether you're at the grocery store having an encounter with a stranger or whether you're, you know, trying to save your marriage or negotiating a big deal.
Or dating. I find this invaluable if you're just starting to get to know somebody.
You know, and what I didn't get to ask him, and this, maybe I'll reach out to him via email. It was so funny because the other day I was trying to hire somebody to do some work at my house. And the person quoted me a price that was super high, like higher than I ever expected to pay. So I'm trying to talk about different things we can do to get the price down. And I just saw his affect. The contractor's affect went from really, really happy and enthusiastic to like he just couldn't wait to get away from me fast enough in a span of like 3 minutes. And I was like, wow. And he probably didn't realize that his body language was conveying that, but.
Right. So obvious. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was. And I wish like I had the skills to know how to either turn that around. And then when you digest this entire book, you can kind of figure that out, like how to respond, not just how to notice, but how to respond.
And the subtle little word choices. Subtle little things, and he gives you examples that will completely reveal someone's intention and state of whether it's warmth or disinterest or anger or frustration towards you. It's really fascinating. Before we wrap up here, I need to give a shout out to Mama Chewy.
Mama Chewy!
Mama Chewy!
How's she doing?
Took a fall a couple weeks ago and broke her femur.
Ouch.
Yeah, so she had to have some surgery to stabilize her leg. She is out of the hospital and in rehab and improving daily. Wonderful. And so I want to send her love and well wishes, but I also just want to say, and I don't want this to come out like patronizing or talking down to her, although I'm so proud of her just being determined to get better and just not this it'd be easy to be into this woe is me. It's a tough spot she's in. She just wants to be home and she wants to be well, but she's keeping an amazing attitude and I'm so proud of her.
Carol, that's 75% of the battle.
Yeah.
75% of the battle, right? And then the rest is obviously is physical and she's going to get stronger every day, but mentally that's terrific.
Yeah.
Because that keeps you going.
So she's doing great.
And sending much love and healing thoughts and positivity to Mama Chewy.
And she is listening to this podcast while she's in rehab. I just talked to her yesterday. She goes, I just listen to Happy Hour, Johnny and Carol.
And some guy named Frankenberry. Mama Chewy. Yes, exactly. That Frankenberry guy sends his love as well.
Oh, good. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. So, all right. Well, I guess that's a wrap because Frankenberry has a lot of editing to do on this episode.
Yeah. I wonder why that is.
I don't know why I could not read Dr. Lieberman's bio, but there's going to be a lot on the cutting room floor. A lot, Frankenberry, on the
cutting room floor. I think you felt emotionally naked in front of him.
Yeah. And I don't know, Jonna, I might just get a little tired in that editing process and leave a lot of it in. I don't know.
I don't blame you, Frankenberry.
I'm going to have to wait and see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks to Dr. Lieberman for joining us this morning and for Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. I'm Frankenberry. Thanks again for listening to Happy Hour. We'll be back again, same time, right here next week. Until then, be good, be safe.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.